how they shut down the new set. I was only waiting for Adam. I was expecting us. Yes. Coach, when you are members, our visitors today and everybody present, we want to start. We have a busy day ahead, and we took a decision that we are going to be having a very long day today. Can I seek the indulgence of the members so that we can dispose of all the set of minutes that we have before us, get done with them, so that we can proceed with the business of the day later. I want to suggest that we start with the 5th of April set of minutes, and we will then come to the 6th of April. We will come to 12th of April. We have two sets for the 12th, and the 3rd of May will be the last. I'm working from an assumption that members have copies of them. In any case, they were sent to our email address electronically long ago. Can we proceed to change the minutes? The 5th of April. Is everything on page 1 captured accordingly? The fifth of April. On the second page, the third page, the fourth, and the last one. Can I take minutes to raise and agree to? Comrade Hale, agree in any second? Member Koshi, can we proceed to the 6th of April set? Anything on page 1? Anything on page 2? Anything on page 3? Page 4. Page 5. Could you consider minutes of a red and a red 2? Then my question, any second? I mean, every minute, second, the 3 minutes of the 6th of April. Honorable Timony, the 12th of April we have two sets. starting on page 3. The last page, could you consider the necessary and aggressive in the current form? Makoshi? Thank you, Honorable Makoshi. Yes, but Honorable Makoshi again in bed. We have the last Tuesday, the 3rd of May. We have page 1, page 2. Honorable Kalinge, Honorable Swala, and Honorable Makwe.
Just looking on page 2, under the Eastern Cape, it says the committee deliberated on the input of the Eastern Cape province and supports the extension that is as initially proposed under the Limpopo, and initially proposed under the Limpopo submission. Well, as I would say, as also, because we first deliberated on the Eastern Cape one, so it might be as also proposed under the report and indicated that most issues being raised have been covered in the bill. So now that last bit, I need clarity on, because does it mean the other issues raised by the province, or does it mean what actually does it mean? Indicates that most issues being raised have been covered in the bill. Because what actually happens, I can speak to on the last page. So I'll wait, but if you can tell me what that means.
Which, if it is as Honorable Makua said, that apologies is page 2, indicate will be then page 4. If you can adjust it to that, then we all know which page we are. I would appreciate it.
You suggest that we number it as such. Let's do it. And you have the Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal as well, right? Mpumalanga is 6. Consideration of the Minister's service. The issue that was raised by Honorable Fanlinge, to the recollection of that day committee, the suggestion by Eastern Cape and the suggestion by Limpopo, which according to the minutes, according to my view captured accordingly, was the extension of the 20-day period to the 30-day period, considering that you even motivated and said some of the parts in the Eastern Cape, the most of it are lost. And therefore, the expectation that the 20-day period would be able to reach the people who are supposed to be getting the registered name, it's going to be difficult in some areas. We took it that the 30-day period suggested by Eastern Cape and suggested by the Limpopo was in the light. And that adoption was made in that light. In the all other issues that were there, the agreement of the committee was that those issues were sufficiently covered broadly in the context and the presence of the bill as it was. If there are any other issues that you think that were not covered, I think we are going to be coming to that to rectify some of the other issues and take it in line with the final mandate as to what is it that we are going to do. Welcome, Honorable Father. Is very great, Honorable Father. Any other issue on the minute? On page 3. No, page 4. On page 5. Number 4. Page 6.
Chairperson, the electronic version of the housing negotiating mandate was never circulated to us. Only the recommendations were given to us in hard copy. So we're not really familiar with what the province said in their negotiating mandate on the actual document of the negotiating mandate. We presume, making the deduction, that maybe the province supported the bill, but we have not seen any proof of that.
Chair, the Hotel mandate was very concise. They gave us a letter which has been distributed to all the members. I can't understand how the honourable member says it's not seen. In that letter that was distributed to us in the meeting, Gauteng indicated that we support the bill. There was no further recommendations that we received from Gauteng. Thank you, sir.
Honourable McCoshin, Honourable Lenny, if you want to be noted, please just raise your hand slightly.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. President. I was in this mission. I have received the negotiating marriage from Gauteng to fulfill my ticket. I did not accept the recommendations, only that they will support the bill. Thank you.
Honorable
Chairperson, in the mandating procedures provincial act, there is a format for a negotiating mandate and there is an official format for a final mandate. And this particular one of Gauteng, I took it that what was sent to us, or submitted here in the meeting, was recommendations and not a formal negotiating mandate as per the format. That's the issue that I'm raising.
You know, it's difficult to hear Honourable Fondling in respect. You're not disputing what other Honourable members are saying. The mandate of housing was read in a full-fledged committee. It was agreed, we deliberated on the recommendations, and that issue has now been concluded and been captured as such. And we want to raise it through the minute, of course, they are correctly captured that housing mandate was here, and this is what housing negotiating mandate says. What we can do is to allow the process that the negotiating mandate were received, were processed. The final mandate are going to be held with later today, and we will take it from there. Because we can't deal with a separate issue from what the negotiating mandate are and what is the final mandate are. Honourable McQueen.
I would know you want to make an earnest appeal that we deal with the matter before us, which is the minute of the meeting.
Can we proceed to page 6? Any other matter that you want to raise, Honourable Faber?
Chairperson, under my province, the Northern Cape province, in this committee, it was decided by this committee to get clarity on certain issues that was raised by the Northern Cape province. It was sent off to me by the then chairperson to get clarity on it, which I said I could not make assumptions according to what was said by the portfolio committee. I then spoke to one of the portfolio committee members yesterday, which said to me nothing was brought back to them on the portfolio committee. I also looked at the minutes that was sent to us here, and this minute clearly states here that the committee accepted the view that the current financial governance framework under EGMA efficiently regulates aspects. Now, there were certain things that were not clear, and it should have been, it was said by this committee, back to the Northern Cape province, which has not been done. So by that, I cannot say that this is correct, Matt, and I would really like us to change it, number one. And secondly, on the 6th, that was Friday, the Northern Cape Portfolio Committee gave the final mandate. And I cannot see how they could have done that if they did not get any feedback from this committee on the negotiating mandate. That cannot happen like that.
Any other view on the Honourable McQueen?
Chair, it would be because my name has been mentioned as the person who chaired the meeting. My recollection of what happened in the meeting, Chair, was that we had a delegate from the Northern Cape in the meeting. And I checked with a delegate from the Northern Cape whether you want to clarify those issues with the province. When the secretary and I looked at our notes on the meeting, we concurred that there was nothing substantive in terms of the content of the bill that was not covered by the presentation from the Northern Cape, and therefore we have processed it the way that the minister is captured today. Thank you, sir.
Chairperson, with due respect, I believe we are a full committee. And if this committee made the decision, and the then chair actually made that decision, and we can even go and look on the test, it was said that this negotiating mandate must go back to the province. Everyone that sat here heard it very clearly. Now, if that was said, then it has to go back. It cannot then be a decision between the secretary and the then acting chair to make this decision just on their own. This cannot happen like that, because we all agreed upon this, that it will go back, and it did not go back. As I said, one of the people on that portfolio committee told me nothing came back to them. Thank you, Chair.
The difficulty that we're exposed to in this committee is to forever deal with issues that are spoken on corridors. And it's going to make things difficult for us. Let me speak on another front. The normal process I want to assume was that we sat in the meeting, we processed, and the following day all provinces were sent minutes captured and sent to all other members. And any other province which was or any other province was at liberty to raise any other issue that was not comfortable with them. I followed, and I want to assume that any other member who represents his province follows up on the issue that was supposed to be raised. When we conclude the meeting on that particular day, again at that moment processed and said, this particular province, are you comfortable? What are the issues that should be raised? And we all concluded that issues should be raised and issues were correctly covered. So this issue, I think it was done, many were sent timelessly, and I want to assume the Northern Cape took a decision based on the minutes that were sent to them. And if Northern Cape was not comfortable, Northern Cape would then indicate that in the Rainer mandate. Can we proceed to page 7? Honourable
Father. If you give minutes this way to my back to my province, how can they then say that they have to make sure?
It doesn't state that in the minutes.
If it doesn't state that in the minutes, how can they then okay? It is not this minute that's here. It's not saying that it has to go back to the province to get clarity on. Now, if it doesn't say that in the minutes, you cannot tell me that the province will be okay with it because it doesn't stay here. So the province cannot see that, oh, we have to get clarity on this. Let us say to the select committee what we meant to get clarity on this. So you can't just assume that. And this is what I said to the then chair, that I cannot make that assumption. And we all decided that it will then go back to the province. Now, this is what I've done, like when you start changing words to apply and suit us. You cannot do that, chairperson. It is not right.
Chairperson, I concur with the ruling that you have made that these minutes were given to the Modern Cape. If they were not happy, they could have looked at it. But I particularly want to support that further, Chair, by pointing out the first, by reading to the meeting, the first sentence on item 2.7 in the minutes, which relates to the Modern Cape and reads as follows. Overall, the number of issues raised in the Northern Cape negotiating mandate have already been covered by other provinces and the book itself. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, maybe this is a technical point, but I cannot see how a province can object to the minutes of a select committee. If they are not happy, the only thing they can do is vote against the bill. But not even Honourable Faber could object to the minutes. He is trying to do so now, and if you care to listen, he has to then officially object to the minutes at the end of it as to whether we are calling for a division or not.
And if we are going to resort to semantics, we are not going to proceed. I can give you an example. You've just spoken, but you're already raising your hand.
Yeah,
well, you finished with that, and I want to raise.
I'm
opening, so I want to see 2.9. I was saying, if we are going to resort to semantics, we are not going to proceed. I can give you an example. I can read to you the correct text of what is written under 2.7. And I can tell you now that if not in case that all material terms was uncomfortable, they could have skipped it and raised it with us. And we are not, the province, matter the select committee is not negotiating under the shade of each other. We are not negotiating under the shade of the local committee of the province. The province is at liberty to take a decision separate from us. So whatever that we do, we don't want anybody to be exercising this authority over us. The local committee is also at liberty. What 2.7 says, it says, overall, the number of issues raised in the Northern Cape negotiating mandate have already been covered by other provinces and the bill itself, except the issue that we mentioned here. So let's not go to semantics. And can I appeal that we proceed? You wanted to raise 2.9. The floor.
The last sentence, the committee agreed that the legal advisor should submit a more detailed analysis of the issue and submit information before the final negotiating mandates are considered, which we have received. I'm just a little bit concerned about the legal mandate, because it's trying to draw a distinction between a legal and a physical eviction, and I don't think it's valid. But whether we accept it or not, it has been made. So be that as it may, it has been submitted, but it must not be considered as the only opinion or the income opinion.
This is not a difficulty that we're facing as a civil commission. We said the legal opinion must be sourced and the time frame must be abided to get what's done. We have the legal opinion now. We are still saying it is not sufficient. Other members, Honorable McQueen.
Can I for the second time appeal to you that we please deal with the minutes?
We were on 2.9. If there are no other certain issues to be raised, on page 7, Honorable Sanghini.
The first paragraph, if a need arises, the committee should request, not request it, a rapid social economic impact assessment to be undertaken to determine da-da-da-da. In a nutshell, the committee resolves that most of the recommendations and amendments would first of all, the first sentence. We have not seen such a statement. And then we go on, and the last sentence, the committee further resolves that the role of judicial authorities in expropriation processes and other land reform matters. Now, there's a full stop. That sentence doesn't make sense. The committee was of the view that the broader consultation process with COPTA should deal with this matter. I cannot believe that the committee took such a decision, because when it comes to expropriation bill that's before this committee, another committee cannot go and consult to an authority involved in this bill on our behalf. So that cannot be correct. Totally on one path. In the last sentence, the committee agreed that section 9, 2 and 3, extending 20 to 30 days and 10 days to 20 days, respectively should be accepted. Now, we are busy with minutes. So, if it was accepted, then I can accept the C version of the bill. But if it should be accepted, then it's not reported correctly. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? So, respectfully, was accepted or were accepted, then there's legal ground for a C version of the bill, which was circulated, but not even to the committee. We didn't get the C version of the bill. Then, lastly, nothing was said of the state, the opinion raised by the state law advisor, who said section 25 of the bill provides sufficiently for the extension of any timeline. That's my issue.
Which part are you, what minutes are you?
I'm still on that bit of that. The first section, if a need arises, so up to before 3.
Okay. Another one, okay. Thank you, sir. There's 3 points. The first is with the bullet on page 7, the role of traditional authorities. I would want to propose that where there is a full stop after matters, we can select to inquire. My second point is that we are not going to give a class of lecture on English 101 in this session. There's a difference between should and was, and I concur that it should remain as it is in the balance. My third point, Chair, is I want to formally then propose the acceptance of the minutes with that one change, which is changing the full stop to the hour. I so propose, Chair.
Can we further? Probably the second part of the sentence, another number. try to frame it so that it resonates with what Honorable Mabuse was raising and what the Northwest was raising at that point. That traditional, how the traditional leadership should be engaged as a stakeholder moving forward. So that we remove the COCTA, because COCTA represents department and COCTA represents an institution. So that we can deal with the issue that's raised by Honorable Fahingen, that it's seemingly we are consulting another department. Are you comfortable with that? Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Honorable Fahingen, there's already a mover for the adoption with the necessary amendments. Oh, are you not second? Okay, can I raise it?
Under C, the committee could not consider the minutes due to time constraints, and these were shelved. I'm commending the sentence. And however, the Honourable Makua is referring to me as doing only one I don't know, markings. We either do things properly or we don't. Because if we can't write minutes properly, we cannot be doing legislation properly.
We appreciate that. Thank you so much for the amendment. Do we have any second of the necessary amendments that you made? Now, question.
I am so convinced that I'm also sorry to have the Honourable Mokwa not mentioned any books in the
Thank you so much. We have dealt with all the minutes before us. We are going to be proceeding to another funding.
If you want to finish with the minutes, I need to officially record that we as a Democratic Alliance object to the minutes. And we want our names recorded accordingly.
But you can't take us back, and there's no democratic alliance here. There are members of the select committee in the history representing provinces.
No.
And I will follow.
Except for what my colleague said, I would object for my promise. Because I cannot see how, if I'm the representative of my province, and I feel that my province did not get the time to look at these recommendations that were sent back to them, or the queries that were sent back, then I'll have to object for my province, and not just for the Democratic Alliance.
Much better, Honorable Father. Let's do this in future. In future, during the process of the acceptance of the minutes, members are at liberty to raise their dissenting view. Let's not allow the process to conclude, to proceed, and then we have issues that we want to raise thereafter. Members were at liberty to raise whatever dissenting view that they had at the time when we were accepting minutes, and you did not do that. However, we will record the Honorable Father's disagreement dissenting view with the minutes. Honorable Queen.
Chair, in the light of what has just happened, I also want to register that I notice with disappointment that the two members of the DA, Honourable Father and Honourable Lennon, is doing everything in their power to prevent us from processing the expropriation. And I want it recorded, Chair.
We must understand clearly that although we are representing our provinces, we have a duty as members of parliament to make sure that things happen correctly. And I am not going to keep quiet because there is another member of the Eastern Cape sitting here whom you may think has the right to speak on behalf of the province. And even if it is like that, I don't mind. I will not let anything come through that is not correct.
But members, can we now proceed? Because what are raising now is just issues that you can raise on the corridors. I don't see any issue here. Honorable Nguita has not even spoken and you're speaking one thing at the other, and she's here, she can speak if she wants to.
No problem. Thank you. See, I listened to the statement that Honorable Guru made, and I cannot stand by that. As I said very clearly to you, I'm representing my province, and as my province, I definitely have a problem with it. So, by Honorable Makui saying that the representative of the DA and making it a political thing, to me, is wrong, because I'm definitely raising it on the point of, if I believe as a politician there's something wrong, that's correct. But I am specifically doing this because of I'm feeling my province is not getting the specific chance. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Father. We are going to proceed to taking the presentation by the Department of Small Business. Thank you and welcome to everybody that has joined us this morning. We know that you are trying to settle now. Thank you,
ma'am.
Are we not going to do the final mandate?
Yeah.
That's today we are going to do that.
But not now. You're going to give the minister chance to speak first on another subject while we've just done the minutes.
Well, Sanli, we are going to do the final mandate today in this moment. Are you okay?
I'm fine.
Thank you so much. Look disturbed, Honorable Father. Are you okay? Thank you very much, Shepard. And fine. I'm just observing the fight between the ANC and the DA for position of official opposition. They are not even 5 minutes yet. Welcome back. They are raising issues they were not supposed to raise. Honorable Father?
Yes. You have no idea what is fighting and having just some robust conversation in our issues.
Honorable Father, I therefore directed to withdraw.
Honorable Chairperson, please allow me to greet all of you with a may I be allowed to add that while I've been away, you will be preparing to capture the speech.
Well, welcome, Honorable Minister. We're having an early morning, a very active meeting, and welcome. We are also welcoming members who have not been here for over 6 months, so it's kind of a tricky situation. Honorable Minister, if you are ready, we are in your hands.
Chairperson, thank you very much and good morning to all the members of the Select Committee. I will apologize that I'm just a bit under the weather, but I am ready to make just an overview and political input, and the DG will make the full presentation. Firstly, I would like to introduce the DG, because this is the first time that she is participating here. DG Edith Rees started with the department last year already in September. Maybe let me also say the advantage I have in having DG Edith Rees is the fact that she's somebody that has been in the system, so she understands all these processes very well. She was the DG agriculture, FMN, agriculture, forestry and fisheries, and she's now with us, but her background is also both the academia, as you and I'm saying, she is a professor.
She has worked with government quite extensively, and it really is a pleasure for me to have her, because I don't have to be teaching somebody new ways. And I must say that also my DG is a fighter for the state of small business development when it comes to other government structures, because when you are in that space of DGs, you need to think to fight for your space. And then also in addition, I would like to introduce one of my advisors, right, if you can raise your hand, yes. That is Dr. Tamima Zwai, and I think many people who've been in the small and medium enterprise would know him very well. He is an old hand, if I can say, in the area of small and medium enterprise, especially in policy, development, formulation, and just being an activist really around the issue of small business development. Honorable members, I will not go back to the decisions of the governing party, the African National Congress, in deciding to have the Department of Small Business Development being an independent entity, independent from the fact that it no longer belongs, we no longer fall under the Department of Trade and Industry. But also to say that in the 2 years that we have been in office, I can guarantee you that the experience that we've accumulated in the 2 years have clearly indicated to us the importance of small and medium enterprises as well as cooperatives, particularly in addressing the triple challenges that are faced by South Africa, namely poverty, unemployment, and joblessness. In the process of government putting together a program, besides the National Development Plan, which we all are aware of, government decided on the 9-point plan and unlocking the potential for SMEs and cooperatives and townships, is supporting the NDP, has also been identified as one of the 9 points of government's intervention. And ours is to positively contribute towards growing the economy and, as I said, addressing the triple challenges. Since the last time we presented to the Select Committee, we not only did we have, do we now have the DG and the new advisors, but also the areas of administration and management has really been beefed up, and I think the DG will make the presentation, including those offices that were not filled up as a CFO, as well as corporate services, and I think the DG will deal with that. I think what is very important for us as a department is the fact that from the last time we made presentations here, we have had to go through a review process. And this review was aimed at ensuring that our programs speak to the best needs of the African entrepreneurs, small and medium enterprises, as well as the informal sector, because we have also identified the informal sector as one of the critical areas of support that need to be supported by ourselves. As you are aware, we inherited a collection of programs and budget from the GDI, which was not orientated to leading the gains towards a collective and integrated approach to the support of SMEs and cooperatives. So one of the things that we have done in the review is really to look at those programs that needed, as a result of the review itself indicated that there were programs that needed to be upscaled, there were programs that needed to be transferred, and of course there were programs that needed to be discontinued. Now, this was an independent review that was done by Susan Danuba and Gobodo, but we didn't take the review as it was lock, stock and barrel and are beginning to implement it with our own results, where we had to just make sure that we were also comfortable with some of the recommendations that were made by the review. So we held our own 2-day workshops with an independent consultant who assisted us in ensuring that the programs that remain with us truly are the programs that will benefit your small and medium enterprises and cooperatives.
So our department remains with an inadequate budget of 4.3 billion of the NTSF period, approximately 1.4 billion a year, which is inadequate to achieve the NDP targets. We're raising this issue of the budget because it's been an issue from the time that we started, and we understood exactly the challenges that we faced by budget allocations, but we still insist and we still believe that if we were to be, if small and medium enterprises could be allocated more resources, we would be in a better position. And we say this not because we come hacking. It is because the 2 years also have shown us, particularly with small and medium enterprises of black people, who, by the way, started only 22 years ago. We are aware and conscious of the fact that there are others who managed to survive even before 1994. But if you look at the numbers, it was very, very a tiny, tiny number of black people who were able to. So we see in the 2 years, most of the requests that we get from many of them is about financial and non-financial support. Many of them are supported either by government in the value chain of government itself. Some of them are supported by the private sector in the value chain. But in many instances, they struggle to even fulfill the in the value chain of supply or whatever whatever plans that they have, they always suffer from inadequate finances. So we continue to advocate for additional funds to ensure that we effectively contribute towards creating jobs. And of course, for those of you who watched the news yesterday, I'm sure you must have seen that part of the discussion that has been going on with business, between government, business, big business, black business, and the private sector in general, there was an agreement that we need to have a special fund, which was announced by the President yesterday evening, to assist SMEs to survive through the economic crisis. We believe that this is a step. We believe that this is a step in the right direction, and we will still have conversations about how this fund is going to be managed, who is going to manage this fund. And ultimately, for us in the department, it's about ensuring that the beneficiaries of this fund are your small and medium enterprises. Because tendency sometimes is that you have a creation of a fund like that, and big business itself will then have the fund managers, and at the end of the day, those will be the people that benefit instead of your small businesses. And central coordination and partnership between the three spheres of government is one of the issues that we think is very important for the department. And we think that the ACOP would play a very important role here in terms of the oversight, because one of the things we realized was that the three spheres of government were not properly coordinating in supporting small and medium enterprises. And then lastly, we've got the agencies, obviously CEDA and CIFA, but we also are looking at supporting the agencies through ensuring that the agencies will also participate in the special fund that we're talking about. But these agencies is also about the connection of not only the two agencies that are under us, but it's all the other agencies that are related to financial assistance to small and medium enterprises. Lastly, we'd like to note that SARS has crossed the trillion rand threshold of collecting, and is large measures because of the first-time contributors who are SMEs in particular. We think this is a positive on our side, and we will continue to work together with SARS to make sure that small and medium enterprises contribute to the GDP in general. Can I please hand over? I thank you. Can I please hand over to the DG?
Thank you so much, Minister and your team. DG, we are a select committee responsible, and these members are going to be looking specifically on how the kind of the work that you are doing for the creation in different provinces, and they are going to, because as we sit here, we represent provinces. These are your members of the committee. Thank you so much and congratulations. We will be working with you moving forward, and we hope that we are going to be having this seamless working together. We just want to seek your indulgence, members, that we find it difficult to use the projector here, but members are getting copies. Can we proceed when the DG is presenting, that we follow on the copies that you have provided for us? Agreed? Thank you. Thank you, DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and thank you, Minister, for the welcome. Chairperson, we have a team with us, also with us at the budget vote tomorrow, so we've come prepared. I'd like to introduce the at the end of the second quarter, we had a vacancy rate of over 25%. But that was largely because we were busy with the program review, and we thought that it was irresponsible to employ people into particular positions when the review was finished, knowing that the review would impact on how we would organize ourselves. So there's been quite a few changes since then. I'd like to introduce Sam Sampede Oosterbrink, who is our Chief Financial Officer. Comes with a lot of experience, particularly previously the CEO of South Africa and the Department of Economic Development. And then we have the Head of Corporate Services, Bridget Peterson. Bridget, where are you? We also appointed another woman, the Chief Audit Executive. And so by the end of the financial year, our vacancy rate stood at so high, at 16.3, but I think a significant drop from where it was. And as from 1st of April, with all of the new people who have joined us, as ministers, it really beefed up that team. It's down to about 14.2 and dropping. So, Chairperson, it's quite a long presentation. I don't think there's a limit on my time, or I should just proceed. The presentation outline on page 2 focuses on the strategic overview, and we followed the format basically of the strategic plan. And I guess the committee might have a lot of interest in the actual work plan. So the mandate of the department, slide 3, says that the department will lead an integrated approach to the promotion and development of small businesses and cooperatives through a focus on the economic and legislative drivers that stimulate entrepreneurship to contribute towards a radical socio-economic transformation. One of the points of wisdom that we've adopted from our review is found on slide 4, which says that in some way there's a tension between supporting on the one hand the dynamic, established enterprises that are focused on growth, and those that are focused on social poverty eradication, social services and programs, and then the service, those much needed services in some of our poorest communities. And so we say the growth-focused enterprises are those that are ready to export products and ready to take up trade-off agreements. They have a greater return on investment. They advance through the critical phase of business development. The back industrious program, which I'm sure the committee is aware of, but it's those businesses that are ready to possibly access what is available and what is in the black industrious program. Whereas, on the other hand, the other set of programs are those that are the micro and informal enterprises which abound in our townships and rural towns it brings economic dignity to many households. So we said that's almost the whole continuum. But as a department, our mandate tells us that we don't have a luxury of deciding between one or the other. We have to service the whole continuum. We have to focus on all of those sectors. And the issue find the balance and find the areas of highest impact in both areas. I move to slide 5, and it expresses our vision, and that is that our vision is a radically transformed economy through the effective development and increased participation of SMEs and cooperatives in the mainstream of the economy. And our work is to create a conducive environment for the growth and development of small businesses and cooperatives through the provision of improved financial and non-financial support services and leveraging on public and private procurement, and also speak to our three core values, which is integrity, professionalism, accessibility, and commitment. And our mandate, I think there are several sections in the Bill of Rights, but it's also a specific one that we draw on in section 22 that says every citizen has the right to choose their trade, occupation, or profession freely, and the practice of trade, occupation, or profession may be regulated by law. And I think that section goes further, where it says that a department can, or government entity can, in its policies, target particular sections that have previously been excluded. A policy mandate comes from the National Development Plan, and when a key pillar of the plan, National Development NDP, is that we need to diversify our economy and attack it in a very consistent way from four fronts in order to grow the economy and generation, create an economy that is more inclusive, that is more dynamic, and and the fruits of which are shared more equitably. And so we see our mandate very closely linked to implementing chapters 3 and 6 of the National Development Plan that deal with the economy and the rural and inclusive zone. And while the New Growth Path talks about creating 5 million jobs by 2020, and about this inclusive and more labor-intensive efficient economy, the National Development Plan speaks to 11 million jobs by 2050, 90% of which will be created by small businesses. Moving to slide 8, the medium-term strategic 2014-19 medium-term strategic framework, MTSF, is seen as the first five-year implementation plan of the NDP, and it is structured around 14 mandates, and we play a role. We do not lead any of the outcomes, but we have particular responsibilities in outcome 4, and in outcome 7, there is one sub-outcome that we are leading, and that is on the creation of rural enterprises. So other policy mandates we have drawn from the State of the Nation in 2014, the President, or 2015, the President spoke about small business as being big business, and we really like that slogan, and generated the emphasize the need for the economy to prioritize small businesses for offices and the informal sector. And the President also announced the 50% set aside policy, which has been adopted, and for procurement from SMEs for offices, township and rural enterprises. We speak to the policies that we will review, and in the current year, the financial year, namely the promotion of entrepreneurship and small enterprises, and we also currently busy with a review of the National Small Business Act 1996 and as amended in 2004. And that law should be in the parliamentary system by the first quarter of next year. Chair, there's also time to necessary to just focus on the world in which SME operates. And certainly we recognize that globally, small
in the better performing and more stable economies, and that in economies such as Germany, India, Malaysia, Chile and China, the small businesses represent over 95% of the total businesses and employ between 60 and 85% of the total workforce in those countries. In our country, the contribution and participation of small business is far below its potential. And sometimes we also think that the contribution of small businesses, the informal sector, cooperatives, is skipped in much of the data, because there's a large percentage of that economy that is not registered, and therefore their performance is not necessarily recognized in the national account. So if you exclude the multinationals, then small businesses represent 98% of the registered businesses and employ about 47% of the workforce. The labor force statistics that were released yesterday was an explicit about small business and the need for time to assess whether that has changed. There's a change in small business had some growth in the first quarter, and was the data that was released in February, which was trying to understand the most recent one. Going further about the potential of small business, so we say, our argument basically, that there is ample evidence that small business is the key to unlocking wealth in the country. There was research by Goldman Sachs, the report that was released last year, and they concluded with the statement that at Project Stage 12, which says South Africa can achieve 5% growth by 20 over the next 5 years if governments and the private sector together invest $12 billion in 300,000 new small businesses every year over the next 5 years. And so, as my minister has said, in realizing this potential, we have embarked on the process of mobilizing more citizens about government, and to coordinate efforts, and we have been taken our mandate to redefine the policy and regulatory environment such that it favors small business and really unlocks their potential to turn the economy around. The government has also, through the 9-point plan, committed to giving more support to small businesses, so for example, the public procurement system. However, that target which the President announced in last year, we have since determined that it will require an amendment to the Interregional Procurement Framework Act, and instead Treasury introduced interim measures to the regulations in order to widen the window of opportunity for access to small businesses. What is true about the public sector is that there are enormous opportunities. Couple slide 30 reflects on the 2015 public sector supply chain review. And that report confirmed that government procured a staggering $500 billion worth of goods, services and construction work. And our view is, if 30%, if we had the instruments to direct 30% of that amount to small businesses, it would make a huge difference. And therefore, for the reasons provided earlier, that small businesses, the focus on small business, is one of the key pillars of the 9-point plan, which was announced by the economist and the president. And so we are driving the pillar that's entitled Unlocking the Potential of SMEs, Cooperatives, Township and Rural Enterprises in ensuring that the goal of radical socioeconomic transformation is achieved. And then we are at the forefront of leading and coordinating this concerted effort to advance the development of small businesses. I won't go into all the details of slide 14, Chairperson, but it just speaks to, when you look, a lot of us look at our the stress and weakness of our internal environment around last year, September, October, when we did this work, and the external threats that there are. We have opted to set off three strategic objectives. So, much of what we have decided on is effective of what we learned from the program review. So on slide, this is the strategic goal. I don't know why these two slides are not numbered, but I guess it's slide 15. You have the strategic goal, and our first goal is around administration. I think all government departments will have that as because of our governance system within the public sector. So we strive to be an effective and an efficient administration. The next strategic goal is about creating an enabling environment for competitive small businesses and cooperatives. And this goal check is about promoting integrated planning and review of existing legislation, policies, create a simplified environment, and as you will see from the strategic objectives, this goal, this area focuses mainly on policy and research, a function that was missing from the department until the start of this year, because they had inherited from DSDTI, as Minister said, a group of programs, you know, roughly Black Business Supply Development Program, etc., etc. But not as we didn't inherit a department. And then the third strategic goal is around sustainable small business and cooperatives in rural and township communities. And that is so we can have that focus in an area of need. So, Chairperson, slide 16 is presents what our strategic objectives are. So, and it takes the strategic goal one on the effective and efficient administration. We'll look at promoting compliance and good governance as strategic objective one. Two is to drive sound financial management and control. Three, sound performance, planning, reporting, monitoring and evaluation system. Four, to build human resource capability and promote a culture of high performance. And five, to promote internal and external communication work of the department. And it's interesting to note, Chair, that we've only allocated 9% of our entire budget to administration. The second goal, Chair, is something new in TS. All of those are new. One is around to create a conducive legislative and policy environment for SMEs and cooperatives. The second one is to drive integrated planning and monitoring for SMEs and cooperative development. And as you will, and this integrated planning, as you will see from the work plan, as you will see from the work plan, refers to coordinating the efforts of national governments, of provincial governments, and ultimately the private sector as well. The third, to drive comprehensive research agenda, such agenda doesn't exist, and we saw in this third quarter in the process of designing such an agenda. And then develop and implement a relevant international relations study, a strategy, recognizing that we have much to learn and contribute to the international discourse on small business development. The third one, Chair, and the research function, unfortunately, has a very small budget, only 2%. But we've actually been very encouraged by money that has come on board, where other organizations, other partners, and the public entities will partner with us. And so we convince that we can play that role, and all of the funds doesn't have to come from our particular budget. That you will be interested to know too, that strategic objective two, which is the core business, the area that is that speaks about program design and support, the actual implementation, 89% of our budget is allocated to that function. So the first objective is around designing and implementing targeted programs to support new and existing small and medium enterprises in townships and rural towns. And then we have an objective that focuses exclusively on cooperatives, which increase the participation of cooperatives in the mainstream economy, and then to coordinate support through public and private partnerships. A slide around structure, so you will see, Chair, that there are just three branches, and then the Office of the PD and the Office of and the Chief Financial Officer. The slide 18 just talks about, shows where the sub-programs in each of the programs, and that pertains to our direct relationship to that and our strategic objectives. And slide 19 is just a summary showing the previous year's the budget, recognizing of course that in 2012 and 2013 the budget that was selected there is of the budget of a unit in the Department of Trade and Industry, the Broadly Participation Unit. And that in 2014-16, we were still part of the GTI budget vote. And last year was the first time that we had our own budget vote. And so it's to note that even though we have to feel that the budget is inadequate, there is an increase in the budget every year, and the total available to us over the MTF is 4.3 billion. We were, in fact, when we had our initial allocations from Treasury in November and in February, shortly before the State of the Nation, when Cabinet looked at the budget again, we were allocated an additional 375 million $475 million over the MTF, and we were one of the only few departments who received additional money. So I will not go into the detail of slide 20, Chair. It is the kind of thing that all administrations are required to do, and we are very geared to that area. I must say that we also inherited official team of 140 people from the DTI. So people who have been sort of steeped in a culture of compliance, so they understand compliance issues. DTI, for example, last year was one of the few departments that had a team audit, and so we have lived from the best and we're on the same campus. What we have done this coming year, the previous year, we operated under a cooperation agreement. We were sort of, as DTI was handholding us. But since the third quarter of last year, we started weaning ourselves off and preparing for that, developing our own policies and basically looking at a lot of and adopting many of the DTI policies, because they were good policies. So this year, for the first time, we are on our own. We don't have to use their financial systems or their IT system or their HR systems, etc. So we're geared to be independent and to establish our own brand. So the compensation of the next slide 11 explains how the budget for administration is allocated, and basically that compensation of employees accounts for maybe the largest share, and 49%, and goods and services comprises 42%. On slide 22, there's a breakdown of the budget across the various sub programs, I should say, in administration, and as I said earlier, that which constitutes 9% of our budget. And on slide 23, it is a numeric representation of other the budget has been subdivided. If we move to the next slide, which again is, I think it's the table that blocks out the numbers. I think it looks like it's slide 24. The comes to slide program 2.
Provincial growth strategies and
and will be able to guide us to the areas and our inner province that can be targeted. Because if we need to be focused and come with focused efforts with various mandates in a particular area, we will, geographic area, we will make a difference, as opposed to scattering the resources of government all over the province. And then we a statement here, two research reports on cooperatives and SMEs on key areas of the force. And while this target might seem it's made, it couldn't, it is because, as chairperson, we don't, as I said earlier, we don't have a research function. We're establishing that for the first time. So it's all designing the research agenda. And from that, the research agenda, which will approve, that will determine what the two areas will be that we will start from. But overall, we think that ultimately what we have to put in place, the research agenda and the department, is this NDP that guides us all, and underneath that we have to develop this master plan for small business development. This plan that focuses an integrated plan, and it's an area that we are thinking about, and we will pick the piece of research that will guide us towards that. So, the slide 27, as indicator 24, on program evaluation reports, our program review has suggested that we restructure some of our programs, and so we will also look a little bit more deeply at the performance of some of them. And then an international relations strategy, which doesn't exist at present, that's a new area of work. And this program, an allocation of 81.5 million over the MTF and the research has a budget of 71.8% of our budget over the MTF and the rest monitoring and evaluation. The budget allocation in other money that we have over the MTF is found on page 39, sorry. And also the breakdown around cost of employment, and it's not unsurprising that the greatest part of the, in this area, of the budget is allocated to employment, because this is an area where you have to buy employ those specialists, those development economists, etc. Because it's your knowledge bank, and so we're paying for the expertise and specialists that are brought into that unit. Program 3, Chair, talks to all of our the core business areas. We're really proud of our focus on the informal sector. We are driving the national informal business upliftment strategy. It's a strategy that was developed in the GTI, but it was never implemented. It was implemented for the first time in last year. And last year, we entered into a partnership agreement with a wholesale and retail sector, and through the money that we put equal budgets into that program, and we trained just over 1,000 informal traders across the country. And it's been quite encouraging when we went to the graduation ceremonies and heard people speak the difference that made. So not only is training, but it also gives people infrastructure. So if the informal trader, if the mama cooking outside the factory, the more technical support she would get is some equipment or a mobile kitchen, something that she can move from there. So our target is this year for 7,000 informal businesses, and I hasten to add that we do not have the budget for 7,000 informal businesses. However, we have entered into a conversion agreement with the metal and engineering sector, MEV sector, who are coming on board with that. We expect that in this quarter, so WR CETA will increase their contribution, so we are relying on others to come on board, and we will unlock the funding for that. And then informal business structures through CEEF, and CEEF is the socio-economic infrastructure of the city. So in shared economic infrastructure facility. I think honourable members would all have witnessed townships along rural roads where you have enterprises and people standing there in the heat, in the wind, in the cold, selling their goods. And when the weather, climatic conditions are really adverse, it means they are unable to. So we developed this facility in the previous year, and the idea was is that we will co-fund with municipalities. So engage with municipalities and offer the facility, and municipalities were very keen to take up on it, and nobody did. And eventually, I think by the end of the financial year, we started working on one which is a market, I guess now where it is, in the Limpopo, but it's not, hasn't been concluded. Chakuma market. And so what we've done for this is to really believe that it is necessary. It is necessary if we say those enterprise is about economic dignity and social justice, then we must make it possible for the informal traders to trade. So we have said this year that the co-funding doesn't just have to come from municipalities. It can come from other structures as well. Angel donors or businesses or a university or anybody else who wants to co-fund with us, we will do that. But of course the site will have to be serviced by municipalities. Then the business rescue strategy. The research says, suggests that the attrition rate there's a huge attrition rate among all businesses, but small businesses more so, because banks have a very they a low risk appetite for investing in small businesses. The conditions that they put, if you even get into the law, or the high interest rates, etc. And if people divide beyond the first 24 or 36 months, it is by some miracle. So we are developing a business strategy which we will have approved. We have two entities in our area that supports the parliament through us. It's the CEDA, the Small Enterprise Development Agency, and in CIFA, the Small Enterprise Finance Agency, and CIFA is assisting us with developing that strategy. Then, Chair, something that a project that we will drive this year is the establishment of the Corporate Cooperative Development Agency. There's a legislation that has been developed in 2013 already, but the regulations have not been issued, and we intend to conclude that in this year. Even though the Cooperative Development Act is provided for in the legislation, it has never been funded. Treasury has never made the funding available. And our view is that we can start it with as a governance entity, a government component rather, a government enterprise rather than a separate listed entity, much in the way that I think the property trading entity of public works or SACA that are government components, and use the budget that is currently allocated to cooperatives. And at the same time, we have a target for supporting cooperatives through the cooperative CIS, stands for the Cooperative Incentive Scheme, which gives 350,000 rand to every cooperative that is registered and would be in the form of infrastructure and other support, not necessarily just handing the money over to them. There's been some lobbying to say we've got to review that amount, because the 350 was in 2000 was introduced many years ago when our economic climate was very different and what might have been for 350,000 now and what we could then when the grants were introduced, but they are very different. And then training cooperatives through or supporting cooperatives through training, it, we have a child on that also. Then we have the Business Supplier Development Program on slide 33, and our target is 600 enterprises will be supported. And of course, they've given the other target that we have of 50% will be women, 50% will be youth. That, those targets will apply to all of these programs. And then incubators supported, we have learned the value and the importance of incubators, and even though there are incubators, there are about 75 incubators in the country, and roughly 43% of them are CEO-owned incubators, and most of them are reasonably successful. And so, and we're not competing with that, but we believe that when we had the first South African Business Incubator Conference earlier this year, and what we learned from that is that the role of the national department is to develop, do the research, develop the new program, which is the policy, develop the program, pilot it, and pilot the new methodologies, and that is what we intend to do here. And then, of course, the partnership agreements. Partnership agreements, whether it is with other government departments or whether it is with the private sector, and we've been very encouraged by some of what is already in place. Then the National Co-Location Program is something which I think the Select Committee was very interested in. CEDA has about 58 offices around the country. And then a number of regional offices, and there's a number of mobile units that operate from that. And so we have set the target and said, at some stage we will have to provide clients, small businesses, new entrants, startups, any company with a one-stop shop, a seamless service. So in the past financial year, we had a target of establishing 25 co-location points, and we exceeded that target, and we this year we will develop more of them, but we also discovered that we've got to review the concept, because you can have CEDA and CEFA and maybe a provincial development agency in one place, but unless they work together, you know, the person doesn't have to start a new application when they go from one floor to the other, but it must really be seen that we're reviewing that concept. In the next target came to the Interdepartmental Committee on Coordination, a framework for the coordination, and a framework for working with provinces, and then integrated planning engagements with the local government. And you may well ask, why are these all different targets? But because it is different streams of work. You can't have one meeting where everybody in the same session. So the next few slides, and we have already indicated that 89% of our budget goes to this area of work, and the next few slides speaks to how that has been allocated. I'm not going to spend time in unpacking each of those, chairperson. Again, here you would see that the largest, on slide 38, that the largest chunk of the budget of transfers, and that, and say, other transfers into particular programs. There's the Black Supply Development Program, or cooperatives, or information program. Just a few things about CEDA, chairperson, on slide 40. CEDA provides mainly non 39. Okay. The non-financial services of business information and advice, business management, training and mentoring, and the senior technology program. They do this through a stream of business advisors in addition to their own staff. Slide 41 gives you an indication of the number of feeder branches and incubators, co-location points, the info kiosks, etc. And there are various things that we have to be doing. Page 42, with the finalization of the appointment of the CFO, CEO was outstanding until recently. That has been concluded. We expect the candidate to assume duties soon. The funding, the chairperson, generally, if you look at how the national budget is allocated, there's very little money that is allocated for actual development, you know? I mean, if I can make a comparison, in the construction area, you've got the CIB, the Construction Industry Development Board, which registers contractors from grade 1 to grade 9. And each of those grades are associated by the level of business that you are entitled and legally be allocated. But there are close to 92,000 contractors registered, then 89% of those are black contractor sectors stuck in category one, limited to business of 100,000 rand. But the money, so we expect those contractors to move up and become contractor 9 as contractors, but the budget that is available for development is very limited. There'll be budgets for schools, there'll be budgets for whatever. So I think we retain the same idea, but I think it is just a paradigm across the public sector that the investment we make in development is limited. And then about the competency framework on page 42 of the practitioners and the business advisors. If we get 10 complaints from clients a month, then probably 6 of them will be something about the business advisor, who was unscrupulous, who asked for cutting the business, who didn't do what is expected. So what CIDA will be developing with our support is a competency framework. Honourable members will be interested in slide 43, that gives a map of where the CIDA points are. A few slides on CIDA. It talks about slide 43, the financial services that they provide for micro-enterprises and SME funding, the core modalities that they have, and a new area that they introduced in order to address the attrition of businesses. Area number 4 is the pre- and post-business support, realizing that you have to hold the hands of businesses. The CIDA disbursement on the actual for 2014 and the unaudited for the year just behind us. And so there's a reduction in the number of disbursements. And we often find that there's a gap between the approval and the disbursement. Because after approval, enterprises have to provide documentation or invoices, etc., and in our environment. And that often requires some chasing up. Then there's an analysis of the sectors that have been funded by CISA on page 46, followed by page 47 and 49 and 48 share some success stories, because I think we often ask this government spending all of this money, but so what? What difference does it make? So these are just a few of them. One that we are excited about that's not contained in the presentation, for example, is one of our partnerships with the SAB Miller, so the Women in Farming initiative. And we're going to the first harvest now, the 26th of May, of the women farmers, and the SAB is going to direct pickup agreement for the maize that will be harvested. There's five on the challenges around CIBA. the need to recapitalize CIPA, and et cetera, some of the defaults, the sort of the slow repayment, and one realizes that in this economic climate, the businesses are struggling to meet loan financial commitments and the corrective measures in place. Slide 53 gives an indication of where all of the CIPA points are, and also the co-location points with CIPA. And what we have introduced, Chair, that we didn't have, or we had it last year, but really sharpening up in the governance over the entities. We know that they have a legislated mandate, but so we can do this seamless service. Chair, I will stop there, and I trust that that gives you a sense of our APPE and strategic plan for.
Thank you, DG. I was deliberate not to give you the timelines because it is your first time that you appeared before the committee. We couldn't give you the partition of time. As a normal practice moving forward, we are going to be giving you timelines so that members can have adequate time to engage with the report. Members are going to be, like I indicated earlier, going to throw at you specifics, somehow having the potential dynamics, and try to your greatest level of to try to answer their questions so that they can have a gist of what is meant of that. Can I now turn to the interrogation of the report as presented? Honorable McGuay, Honorable Lawrence, Makoshi, Honorable Nita, Ambele. Thank you so much, Honorable McQueen.
I welcome the presentation, Chair. Thanks to you for giving me the opportunity. Just on slide 28, on the second bullet, you give us a percentage of 71.8%. And you say that is part of the budget. Would I be correct to interpret that it's only 71.8% of program 2 and not of the budget? Okay. Then I'm answered on that one. My second one on the presentation would be through you, Chair, on slide 42, where you refer to the trust. Can one assume that this is the trust that was spoken of after the wonderful group of South Africans had to meet at Union Buildings? That is that trust that you're talking to. Yeah. Just for us to get an indication that indeed, because we may have received the 1 billion, Honorable Minister, but it would help us as well to, at the opportune time, hear from you who the trustees are, just in terms of our oversight, if that is the same trust. My final 2 points, Chair, would just be one. We have a complaint from a lot of small businesses about bank charges and banking fees. Did you also come across that, and is there any feedback that we can give to small businesses on that? My final one is, I just come from the tourism in Durban. It was held in Durban, and tourism has been recognized as one of the industries where there is great potential for job creation. I didn't see you mentioning it specifically in the presentation, but can you tell us whether it's part of your plan as well to then seek cooperation with tourism departments in governments or nationally? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. We raised this last year and during the speeches and our debate earlier as well. And with the unemployment figures being released recently again, and it's not painting a very pretty picture for South Africa, and you're touching on the role of small businesses creating jobs. themselves and driving the economy in other countries, and now you're hopefully out of your baby shoes. But when do you think this department will start showing the respect in the job market that the unemployment starts receding and not keep on increasing? Because that's primarily why you were put there, to make sure that we increase the opportunities. And it's not, well, there's a debate around that when we can start expecting to see results, but I would like to hear from your side, when do you expect to start seeing real tangible results and not just words and presentations that have been presented at the moment?
The Honourable Lord, a question.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and good morning, Minister, and your angels. Thanks for the presentation. My question is on slide number 14, where the department is talking about the weaknesses in securing greater training in these provinces. I just want to check as to which plans do they have in order to make sure that they move this weakness into their strength, because we are representing the province. I don't think this one is Jesus. And the other one, I wanted to check as to what progress can the department give us since the last budget, even though Honorable Lawrence tried to put it the other way around when he was talking about the effect in the job market. Actually, magician goes to that one. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairman.
Thank you. My question on this one.
Yeah, the question around employment.
Thank you. I wanted to check the progress made by the
in terms of the job creation.
Sitting next to Honorable Sanghini is becoming contagious now. If you are behaving like him.
Thank you very much, Chair. So my question is on slide 11, where the report details the small businesses in South Africa. They are about 98% that we have registered, and they create about 47% of jobs. Chair, I am linking that with the latter part of your presentation, when you say one of the challenges is the issue of training of such. If we are really serious about ensuring that they will create jobs, the issue of payment within the stipulated time frame, then it is going to be very important that when you have your meetings with different departments and as well as municipalities, as it is presented here in your presentation, that should be one of the different issues to go for. And again, I've listened to the presentation that the department has the intention of doing a research that will inform them for prioritization of different provinces. How we wish the department would be more specific in terms of the time frame, because expecting this to really start as soon as possible. And our interest is more on those provinces that are predominantly rural, like representing in this case. So I would like to have time frame in that. That was my.
Just the last one from Makoshi.
My apologies, person. I forgot to have the last one under the opportunities where they are talking about supporting the stakeholders. I just want to check if everybody, most of traditional leaders, will form part of the stakeholders. Thanks.
The DGM Minister, we can take this round of questions. There will be an alarm coming after your response. Thank you so much.
May I, Chairperson, just answer to a few so that I can be able to step out and need to do an interview and come back. I'd like to start with the one of the stakeholders, which was the last one.
we have identified a strength, the engagement with stakeholders. In fact, you will see that as we present our budget vote, we indicate particularly the consultation or the engagement with areas, because you can't deal with rural areas and think that we will not engage with traditional leaders. Yes, you can't do that. In fact, one of the things that we did last year together with the Department of Rural Development in Limpopo, we went on a program where we visited areas that are under, if I may use the language, progressive, because you know with traditional leaders you find others, they are really wanting to expose and open up for their subjects, if I may say, and then you find others who do not want to engage with, who do not want to go directly and engage with ordinary people because they want you to go through them. So we are thinking that we need to have respect for them and engage with them so that ultimately we create a trust between ourselves and the department. And this area of engagement in rural provinces, we are sure that you cannot jump. We have also, as an example, in the northwest, we've been working very closely with the Bahatla Bahatela, and they've got very good programs, which they part of which is revitalizing old areas of the previous regime that have now been that have now not been supported by even the provincial government. This is where sometimes the challenge arises. We don't believe as a department that we should just parachute and zoom into those areas without the conversation, both with the provinces as well as the local economic development factors, because if we encourage their own engagement also with those, it would work very well. We are about to sign an MOU actually with Bahatla Bahatela, because we even visited the areas where they're trying to revive industrial sites, which are very old industrial sites. And I know that members might, last week we had issues where some people were saying you are busy working with the Bahatla Bahatela, but there's a court case that is ongoing around them, and we said, look, those issues of the court cases, we don't want to interfere in those areas. What was exciting for us is to find physical, practical things that they are doing. So I'm citing the Limpopo one, and I'm citing the Limpopo and Northwest. The Limpopo one was also very exciting because the traditional leaders had also invited KZN traditional leaders to come and experience what they were doing, what we were doing in partnership with the Department of Rural Development as well as Land Affairs. But one of the things that we believe in as a department is that the strength in supporting SMMEs lies in coordinated approach. So the three spheres of government, and we've also realized that there's been a lot of money that has been lost in the process when the three spheres of government are not talking to each other. As a result, one of the things that we would like to do also is to look at the amount that has been spent by government. It runs into billions. And we want to check, why is it that the value for money that has been poured in there by government, when you look at the results are not what they're supposed to do. So part of the research that we now are going to be having, that in fact, our department, we decided from onset, we must have monitoring and evaluation within us. So we don't wait for the monitoring and evaluation that has to be done by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, but we must connect, obviously, so that we don't work in isolation. So stakeholders for us are very important. If I can also make an example of the stakeholders, yesterday there was the announcement of the by private sector of the 1.5 billion that they are willing to put aside in order to support small and medium enterprise. One of the issues that we raised was that the voice of SMMEs must be the voice of SMMEs and not what business thinks should be. So while we appreciate the fact that they've come up with this amount of money, we want the voice of SMMEs themselves to be heard. Hence, our insisting that Black Business, the Black Business Forum, even though, as I say, that Black Business Forum is a lot of big business and small business is not really being felt in them. We want to make sure that we manage stakeholder relations. To that effect, we have a special office and somebody that is specifically focusing on stakeholder relations. And stakeholder relations for us is not about just attending to invitations. It's about looking at deeper into that. The research for that is very important. May I also indicate that what the DG said about the research unit, we have already had discussions with a number of universities. University of Pretoria, University of Johannesburg, the Deep Institute, we are in strong connection with them because we feel that whatever resources we have can be better augmented by institutions that have an interest in small and medium enterprises. So that there's already an engagement, and some of them were even going through signing of MOUs on where we can be able to work together. If you take, for instance, GIP as an institution, they do a lot of training. And what was exciting about them, they also do a lot of training of the informal sector, which is usually ignored. So we want to work with them closely so that we can be able to strengthen our plans and strengthen our resolve to assisting small and medium enterprises. The unemployment figures, which were released yesterday, we think that part of the research that will help us, we believe research is what you need to do in order to be able to develop interventions that are practical. Because you can't have interventions without the research work. But I think I can give the other questions to the DG while I step out with you to make to the international comeback.
Thank you, Minister, Chairperson. So first, I'll just ask the question in order that they were raised and not those that Minister covered. The issue on the trust has to refer to is the same one that was announced in the union building yesterday. No, it is not. This trust has been on the cards a little while, and it pertains to CEDA is the implementing agency for the National Gazelles Program, which Minister launched in last year, and we will in the next few weeks announce to the nation the 40 gazelles that have been selected as a participant in the pilot. But the CEDA manages that for us. And we obviously don't have all of the funds that it is required to mentor and carry these 40 gazelles over 3 years. And we found that the private sector has said, yes, we will bring money. We need some money. We'll support them. But we actually not going to give the money to you. So there's a thing about not wanting the money to government directly. We'll form a trust. We'll form a trust. We'll chair the trust. We'll make the decisions. We'll do what you must observe. Right on the paper, you'll be in the trust with us. I don't know what sort of trust that is, you know, that, but so it's a different one. But now that they, and that idea preceded this trust that was announced, I think for the first time, the team spoke about it just the day after, before the summit, but it's the Minister of Finance that spoke about it. But it's really clear to us that we might have to integrate the efforts. We can't have, be split over a few of them. Charges about bank fees, yes, we also have those complaints. But the charges not only include banks, but also DFIs. Again, it goes back to the funding model I made reference to earlier. DFIs, when they've been given the development funding institutions, when they've been given a capital injection by government, we expect them, when they report to us, to show that they have sustained their money. It is a bad DFI if they run out of their capital fund. And how do they retain their capital fund or build their capital fund? DFIs as a rule charges prime plus two. So the poor are in fact are penalized in a way. Either way, it's a double way. So it's an issue. And I think part of our work will be to champion for that. And I guess that is why I said CIFA has put the name, they mainly do grants, and CIFA does loans.
and FIFA have taken some of their money, which they are investing in pre-investment and post-investment support. Because with them, what do they call it, impairment rate, you know, of entities that don't pay back, was quite high. Two others is great potential, like dealing with the honorable member. In fact, tourism was one of the first transversal agreements that we signed. So we have an agreement with tourism. In fact, they also have this tourism enterprise agency. They've got a public entity that does most of the work that they refer to. And tourism is one of those very progressive departments. If you listen to their annual report, in fact, the DGA report of tourism has reported to me that about 63% of their services are delivered by small businesses. And it's a principle but a matter of fact. And another department which is quite surprising is the Department of Public Works, where 84% of their goods and services is also procured, goods and services as construction work, which is mainly school building and so on, is also small businesses, which is a very encouraging. So even the 50% policy, that is in fact a really services procurement, is a standard practice. Unemployment, about when will your department begin to see the difference? I'm going to ask my colleague, unfortunately at this point, we can only speak to the employment that we have created or helped to maintain through our own program. Some of the case studies in the program, but my colleague will keep those figures in our chair. The real challenge is that there there isn't a coherent, a nationally accepted definition of small businesses. Really, there should only be one. It's a small business. What is a small business? What is a media business? It's defined in the National Small Business Act that I made it with. But of course, that act is now 12 years old, and the environment has changed very much since then. But it's that died up. Fact SA uses a different set of parameters, the income-based parameter, when they determine the business parameters. Then there is SARS that uses different parameters. Now SARS, for example, when they recently celebrated breaking through the 1 billion rand ceiling, there was a report in there about small businesses. When they said there has been a sharp increase in the number of small businesses taxpayers, 18,000 more, which means that sector is becoming more mature, and the SARS has a different set of figures. So as I sit here, we are saying there is under-reporting on it. So, we generally use tax essays. But maybe Linda can just use the important figures that we actually do allow that.
Money is acting, but this is like the law for policy for that implementation.
TDG, you are a veteran here, so you know that we want you to perform the education chief strike. Let's get straight to the polls. Yeah. So like education chief strike, straight to the polls.
Thank you, Chair. For last year, 2015, for the financial 2015, the cooperative incentive scheme supported 1,542 jobs, and then the Direct Business Support Development, which has a bigger budget, supported 11,270. And then for our agencies, CEDA, through its provincial network, supported 2,696, and then under the incubation program, which is within CEDA, they supported 2,331 jobs, which are permanent, and the temporary is 1,055. Then CIFA, they were able to support 157,470 jobs in 2015-2016.
If I was moving down, you were hired. Exactly. Can we allow members to also raise other questions, except those that have been raised, or
any follow-ups you have?
Yeah,
on the 30-day payment. DG, if you can just shoot straight to the post.
We, as our department that complies with the rule for the, we had about 1700 invoices, and 100% of them were paid within 30 days. And all I can say is that the presidency does that coordinated, and every month all government departments must comply with that. CEDA also has a helpline where SMEs can call. And I think as honourable member inferred, the main culprit are municipalities and provincial governments. The prioritisation of different provinces, I didn't necessarily know I've got to do official research, but there are indicators there. I think the stats of Africa data tells us which are the poorest provinces. The cabinet has decided on the priority provinces, the 27 priority municipalities, and obviously we will focus on those. The minister has answered the other question. And it's just in terms of coordination with the provinces, we have a provincial structure with the provinces, but what we find is that every month they might send other people to attend the meeting. And what I decided, I will personally chair those meetings. So if I share anything that way, and the agendas are exciting, it will begin to make HOEs to attend. But also, I think we also adopt changing our facilities, asking people to come to meetings in Victoria. We also making a point of establishing a relationship with going out to a city with provinces and meeting with them, as we found with Free State and Housing and some of the support.
Honorable
Chimonya,
any other hand? Honorable Fahine, just Honorable Vara, you will be the third one. Honorable Chimonya.
Just one thing from my side, Honorable Chair. In your situation analysis, you make a point that yes, nobody, SME is the key drive, the key driver for growth and job creation. And you make a point that almost 95% of total business and employment is between 60% and 85% of the total workforce in countries such as Germany, India, and others, come from SME. We continue to make a point and quote from Colin Coleman, that for us to achieve the 30% growth in the network, yes, government needs to invest, the government and private sector need to invest the 12 billion in the creation of the 300,000 new small businesses for us to achieve the 30% growth and demystify the low growth that we currently experience. And some, by the way, in our ranks are celebrating. What is it that we're doing? The minister has just made a point that private sector started a party and made available 1.5 billion or 1.2 billion yesterday, 1.5 billion towards this. I think this is towards achieving this particular goal of 5% growth. What is that you plan or invitation to invest as government in this particular space in the next 5 years to bring the economy into a positive growth path? That's one business.
Honourable Chairperson, on slide 24, or before that, I'm looking at KPIs for numbers 1 to 14. Then, slide number 41, I'd like to know how or what criteria are being used for the CEDA facility. Is it population pro rata, or which province does the DG or the minister come from? And then the slow payments of loans in slide 51, the capital involved versus the slow payments. In other words, what is the return on our capital per annum, and what is the cost of recapitalization and the effect that that has on the budget in this coming financial year?
Thank you so much, Honorable Bora.
Thank you, Chairperson. In this presentation, Colin Coleman has been quoted here as saying that 5% growth could take place if something 12 billion is invested. I would like the department to just give us a issue that I'm, you know, which I'm a bit concerned about is the 500 million rand and the indication that 30% of this, you know, to remove, to take away from 500 million rand business and reallocate it. You're talking about over 160 million rand. I'm not sure that, but I'm not saying it should not be done, please don't misunderstand me, but I'm not sure that this will be able, you know, that you have the capacity to commercialize such an amount outside the present. And this brings me to my very significant point that I want to make. On the chain of everything we are doing in creating small business, the truth of the matter is that one can only create business when there's a market available for that business. And the difficulty we have in South Africa is that, you know, we have 50 million people plus in this country, but what, 40 million, 50 million, something like 80% do not have the buying power, do not have the market is there, but because the buying power is not there. So we need to look at alternatives, Honorable Chair. We need to look outside the box. We need to start looking very seriously of how we can create that buying power. And the best way to do that is to go back to the minimum salary that we are talking about and that we are advocating for very strongly. When we set up the small business, the first challenge that is facing the small business is that there is insufficient buying power. Second challenge that faces the small business, I'm going to use a very simple example. I know small business is not just about retail stores, but if we take the spaza shop, for example, we have a township that has 50 spaza shops, and there are more opens in that township. Now, the problem is the guy is set up for failure. Half the spaza shops close down. The reason for it being simply that the paying fee is not equal to the share. This is the problem that we are facing, and we need to look at the department and the government in general, together with the other associated departments, look at how we can redress this situation. Finally, Chairperson, financial support for these small businesses is essential, but we know that they are set up for failure because of the presence and assistance which have been established before 1994, and those were set up to grow the small business in the areas that need the most in this country, the areas that were previously disadvantaged. So when we talk of nationalization of banks, we should look seriously. I know this term that nationalization makes everyone uncomfortable and we all want to jump on our feet. But it's not about that. It is about making finance on the market available to the people who need it most. And there are ways and means that we can do it. We just need to look at taking this hard copy constitution that somebody has given me, very nice presentation somebody gave me here. We need to look at changing some of these things, and again we'll offer you our 6% support in this regard. Finally, Honourable Chair, and I finish now, there's just two questions that I can ask today, which the first team has looked at and I'm very concerned about. The first question that they have here on this is the Department of Small Business Development needs to tell the committee on how its research program is planning to inform the long overdue paradigm shift in structure and mindset, such that South African and black people in particular move away from this mindset of almost everybody considering searching for employment as opposed to starting a small business and be small self-employed and create jobs for others. The second question is, quite frankly, the Department of Small Business Development needs to show the committee on how it will use research to overhaul the legacy of the Group Areas Act of 1930 and the Bantu Apologies Act of 1951, which still reflects dominant small business activism along racial lines, very similar to what I've been discussing earlier. Thank you, Richard.
Two things from my part, PG. One, I think there's sufficient proof to suggest that, in fact, economic growth of the Asian types, 95% of it was given credit to the SMEs and cooperatives. So the tangible proof to suggest that if we really need to grow economy, we need to go into that sector. However, your department has a difficult role to play. I realize, and Honorable McQueen raised it, in the tourism endeavor that we are selling over the weekend, the bigger portion or the bigger part of what was discussed there was how we will make the SMEs
such times, grow, be sustainable, and make sure that there's market penetration, there's conducive environment. Honorable Brother is correct. And if you look at the research that is before us, in Sub-Sahara, for instance, South Africa is far ahead comparably to other countries. But we are far beyond in terms of our growth of SMMEs as cooperative. Yet, comparably, we have conducive environment, we have issues that we can do to address market penetration, and we have all issues that are going to make it conducive for such sector to try it. However, your department has a difficult. I see that SASOL has also offered 54 billion for innovation into the sector of the SMEs. But now you need to also link with the DTI and see how do you then tap into that. So this whole coordinating body makes it also difficult for you. But you need to see your footprint in everything that you want to do. On slide 4, you speak about growth-focused support and in the intention to ensure that there's poverty alleviation. Please make it simpler for the college. In your budget, how does this mandate intention find expression? Thank you so much.
Possibility expressed by Coleman. The fact is that research tells us that there is some 37.3 or 0.2 billion sitting in the private sector for enterprise development, supply development, and they're sitting on it. So by building the partnerships for the private sector to in fact invest that money. What we learned in the past few days is that government alone in the last budget, this budget now for this year, there is 15 billion allocated for small business development in across different national departments for direct support. Rural development, Department of Rural Development, Department of Tourism, departments, so many departments. So government alone does that direct funding. So that includes the budget too. So it is about coordinating it and directing it to where it needs to go. I'm sorry about those pages that are missing. I only just saw it when I opened this hard copy, and maybe we must just agree to share it and send the secretariat a copy of the entire ATP, which we've got to just, as, you know, we've got to stop August 1 to just before I think. On the slow payment of FIFA and what they will do about that, the challenge that FIFA manages, may share the next time something that's been FIFA, because we've got their slides from them, and I don't think I can't honestly answer all of those questions. Again, on this, there was another question on how we achieve that the growth Coleman proposes. I think that there are also sectors, and it's about, and the research is, what are the growth sectors? There are many of the sectors out there where there is dominance. There were the April financial statistics by Stats South Africa, gives the statistics and says that big business still controls or is responsible but creates about 64% of the value overall. But in mining and I think the other end of mining, big business controls about 98% of that, and the table is very clear on that. Small businesses, on the other hand, small and micro business, medium businesses, commands about 45% in construction and in business, rather in business services. So business services, I guess, is the range of opportunities. So I think it's about finding what, and I agree, that small businesses are not ready, might not be ready to provide the volumes for in all of the sectors. But Tejani's report also on
have talented people and we do have opportunities. And that is part of the work that we will do in the saga that we talked about, coordinating the public procurement issues around the CCS of government. So I think that was a bit better, the buying power and having the right, so I think the issue about which sectors should are growth sectors. The research agenda, those two areas, I cannot answer that. How are you going to inform a mindset change? I think very clear in saying we've just out in a research unit in a month and 11 days old. I mean, so it's still developing the research agenda. So I can't, I don't know whether that is going to be one of the things that you're going to look at in the first year. The transformation of the remnants of the group areas after the apartheid special patterns, I don't think that we can be bold enough to say we will be changing that. I think it's an intergovernmental issue. We talked about that in the economic cluster and what some of the targets are. We believe that the targets that we have begun to set in the 9-point plan will address that. And the only way, I think, Chair, you were saying, what part of our budget, somebody was asking, what part of our budget is allocated to transforming rural areas? I guess it would be that 50% of goods and services of the 89% of our budget, that will be allocated to rural areas. And 50% to townships. So I don't have a figure at hand, but I will have a very interest clear target that the NGOs are accountable for. I think I might have answered all of the questions. Even the, I think your comment about the Asian tigers, I really agree with you, and that tourism is an area, and some of the areas which we lag behind. I mean, one of it is the enterprises be ICT enabled, you know, I think that would be a huge catalyst to putting our small businesses into a different league.
Are you still concerned
about my CFO just given information and said, of our budget, about 98.4 million, $298.4 million is allocated to the National Informal Business Scheme. So that will find that is how it translates into the budget, and cooperatives, $257 million.
Thank you so much, DJ and your team. I want to assume that your answers, your questions were answered adequately. Can we then take this forward and agree that the department presented to us the ATPs, and we, as the committee, satisfied that the issues have been covered. However, we emphasize that there's a need for proper coordination of what needs to be done moving forward with the relevant stakeholders that are engaged, and these issues can be coordinated into a better platform as moving forward. With all, I think the DG was also very explicit about the issue of the private business that we need to pay, however, conditionally, that the trust would need to be formed so that all these other issues, also the SOEs that are going to cooperating lately, in trying to assist, but we need to see emphasis into how do we move forward. Do I see members who want to agree that we accept? Honorable McQueen? Any second? Honorable Makoshi? Thank you so much to the department. DJ, like I said, in the future, we are going to be very time conscious. It was your first day to the community, and we wanted to be, we didn't want you to on your first day facing the committee. Thank you so much for the time that you had to conclude the ATPs of us.
Members, we are going to be moving into the last part of the day, which is to deal with the final mandate. I have, however, realized that members do not have copies of the final mandate as yet. The copies are coming. Can we take a 5 minutes late stretch so that the copies are before you?
I could. Yes. This is the owner, a mass technology.
I'm going to go to the hospital.
But then you have first step action. It's called our job. Is this in relation with the contract? But too many emails that would be when I fish in their family around. No, it's fine.
The process that we must now take is to make sure that we
we take the process forward in relation to the final mandates. Can I know the end of what members are having final mandates before them and what are the views? Honorable Van Lingen, Honorable Mita, Honorable Makoshi, and other members. Honorable Van Lingen.
Listen, can we just quickly outline the procedure here? Do you want us to read the mandate or do you want us to, because they are quite clear.
Honorable Mita.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I thought you were asking
I wanted to establish whether members are having mandate for them so that we can be able to be satisfied that you are taking the process forward.
Yes.
And where members are adequately prepared so that we can move forward. Mm-hmm. Second order of business.
Could I tell you another
question?
Thank you very much. Thank you for recognizing me as the best speaker. I have a request for you. I know that we have been waiting, and we have other meetings. Can we defer this for our tomorrow morning meeting so that we request the chair from Sweden International Relations Committee meeting? So that before we continue the judgments of tomorrow's day, we then start with this mandate and then done with it, because we are the same members from both committees. My request is that we give you the mandate tomorrow. Thank you.
I second the proposal by Honorable Jekhari.
The proposal that we defer the Monday to tomorrow meeting, and the proposal is seconded. We hope that the department will still be available tomorrow for us to proceed. Can we then agree that we are going to be dealing with the administration? Honorable Mini?
This was a deliberate, and I wanted to call it. This was a deliberate effort on your part to stall because you had insufficient mandate by last night. And I want to tell you that this is what you call filibustering. And if it gives you, if you want to defer it, then we will object to that as well, because you know that you are wrong.
Let's agree that the Honorable Van Lingen is having a decent view. Can we agree that you are going to be dealing with the administration with the committee to respond to the cycle can allocate time for tomorrow. Thank you, members. Thank you so much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you so much. I will. Thank you for having me.